This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. On today's show, efforts in Northern Kentucky to lift people out of poverty by providing affordable housing. But first, while most people who don't have access to safe and secure housing are in their situations because of economic reasons, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration says 20 to 25% of the homeless population in the U.S. suffers from some form of severe mental illness. Mount St. Joseph psychology student Rachel Jackson recently completed a documentary on homeless individuals in Cincinnati who suffer with mental health issues and local agencies offering programs and services to help them. The documentary, Homelessness and Mental Illness, will be the keynote presentation at Mount St. Joseph University's Celebration of Teaching and Learning Day on April 20th. Rachel Jackson joins us, along with Mount St. Joseph University Associate Professor of Psychology and co-founder of the Schizophrenia Oral History Project, Dr. Tracy McDonough, to discuss the role that mental health plays in housing insecurity. You can join us, 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Tracy and Rachel, thank you for being here this afternoon.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Rachel, tell us what led you to create this documentary.
So I created this as a result of the independent study project that Dr. McDonough created as a new class. And the purpose was to have students use their strengths to involve themselves with her project on schizophrenia oral histories. And so I thought, how can I really challenge myself in a way that I haven't before? And I thought, well, I haven't really done a whole lot with the arts side of school, so why not try making a video?
So you're a psychology student trying to make a documentary. That's
right. So lots of technical things I had no idea how to do.
Well, did you learn some things as you were going through this, though, and interviewing people about the challenges that they face? Did you come across anything that surprised you?
You know, I think that just the sheer number of people who are having these struggles is really surprising. And so when I'm interviewing all of the people who are involved, it's amazing to see how the community comes together to wrap themselves around the different services and the people to help them achieve whatever they need to achieve.
Is there a particularly poignant moment in the documentary?
I think there is a part where I was interviewing a man on the street who's anonymous in the video, and I ask him what resources he thinks he has, and he says, well, fire, and he just pulls out his lighter. And so I think just something that simple where when I think about the resources I have, I think about my support system, my professors, my mentors, and then I can't imagine only being able to say, well, all I have is fire.
Mm. What were some of the reactions of the homeless people you interviewed?
You know, it was really hard to get people to agree to interview for me. I think that some people were wary about my intentions. And so the people who I did talk to were very friendly, but some of them weren't wanting to be on video at all.
Let's listen to some of the documentary.
So homelessness in Cincinnati looks similar to homelessness in other cities across the nation.
People don't choose to become homeless. Homelessness, like I said, is often the result of an untreated mental illness, loss of a job, lack of affordable housing. So I think the public perception that homelessness is a result of someone being lazy or automatically being on drugs, it's a faulty perception. I think that's something that needs a lot of education.
I live in a wealthy community in Cincinnati, and a lot of my own neighbors and friends will think when they want to do something about giving to mental illness, they think Linder Center, where they, because I think that it feels not so far removed from them. They understand anxiety. They understand some depression. When you think of someone that's homeless and mentally ill, it feels so far removed. So there's lots of stigma and stereotype associated with that. Oh, they just want to be out. They want to live outside like that. Or they're all drug addicts or a variety of different things. And the truth is everybody is so uniquely different.
So, Rachel, tell me about the people you were interviewing there. These were people who are professionals in the field. Who were they?
Yes. So The people you heard from there were Dr. Mark Messman from the Coalition for the Homeless. He's the director of education there. And Mr. Russell Winters, who is the CEO of Tender Mercies, which is an affordable housing organization for people who are both homeless and mentally ill. And you also heard from Dr. Tracy Scale, who is the chief medical officer at Greater Cincinnati Behavioral. And additionally, Dr. Tracy McDonough was interviewed in the documentary.
Tracy, you were interviewed. What did you have to say in this?
Well, I was talking about folks with chronic mental illness, in particular folks with schizophrenia. That's the group that we interview with the Schizophrenia Oral History Project that I do.
Does homelessness contribute to the mental illness, or are they mentally ill and that's what leads to the homelessness? In other words, what do we know why there are so many mentally ill folks who are also homeless?
Well, I think it goes both ways. One gentleman in our project, who was also highlighted in Rachel's documentary, talked about being on the streets, living on the streets for several years. He was struggling with untreated schizophrenia. He was also struggling with an alcohol disorder or alcohol dysfunction there. And it was a couple of years that he was living on the street before someone had even approached him to tell him about the drop-in center, which is now Shelter House. So he was struggling so much with the chaos in his mind and what he was going through that he wasn't even aware of the drop-in center, which is surprising to me as someone who's lived in Cincinnati all her life. But it can make it really challenging for someone to get off the streets once they're on the street, especially if they're not aware of what types of services are available.
Mm. Rachel, what are the challenges that these folks are facing?
There's a really wide number of things that do you mean specifically people who are mentally ill?
It's overwhelming enough to be homeless, but to also be mentally ill and homeless is even more so.
Right.
Yes. What does that particular group face?
You know, I think it depends on the severity of the mental illness a lot of the time, because someone who might be a paranoid schizophrenic might have delusions that they have no sense of reality, where if they're on medication, they might not have those delusions, or if they are not, then you don't know which periods of time are lucid or not. So I think if someone is not in touch with reality, it can make it really hard to understand why you need to go to the hospital, why you need to take medication. And if you're not on medication and you're having those delusions, it's just going to perpetuate this cycle, which is going to make it really hard to have a place to stay at night.
Tracy, how difficult is it to convince someone that has a severe mental illness and is homeless? How difficult is it to convince them to seek help?
It can be very difficult, especially if they're struggling with that paranoia. When folks are dealing with mental illness, oftentimes there's a pretty overwhelming fear. I don't know how I'm going to get any food. I have difficulty working. You know, the folks that we talk to, once they are doing better, once they're well, oftentimes do talk about the difficulty or the grief that they're experiencing, that they're having trouble working. And this kind of gets us to one of the myths of folks who are homeless, that they're lazy and things like that. But it's more the idea that folks are really struggling with more they can handle than they can handle. I know just last year, Bankrate.com came out with a stat that said 59% of Americans are a $500 bill away from being broken, I mean, having difficulties financially that they don't have the money on hand for. So life sometimes changes things a great deal for us. And if you're struggling with a mental illness on top of that, then that's extremely challenging. Mm.
And someone suffering from mental illness, they might get medical help, they might get their medications, but then how tough is it to follow up with them and to keep them on track?
Well, a lot of the case management agencies in the area work very, very hard to try to stay connected with folks, if they've been in the hospital, to make sure that they're hooked up with an outside agency once they're able to be released, once they're well enough to get out of the hospital. But it can be really difficult. When someone with a mental illness is an adult, they have the right to make choices for themselves, even if those choices aren't the healthiest. All of us as adult human beings have the right to make bad choices from time to time. That has nothing to do with mental health status.
Yeah, Rachel, are the resources available locally to help these people? I mean, how is our system for helping folks who are homeless and mentally ill in Cincinnati?
Right. So I think Cincinnati actually has a really good set of resources for people who struggle with these issues. Earlier, I was doing some research, and I saw that just this year, the Department of Housing and Urban Development for the United States awarded $3.8 million to support community efforts to end youth homelessness. And that Cincinnati was one of, I think it was about 130 applicants for that grant. And so I think because of the things that they're already doing to work towards those goals is why they were able to receive that. And I think that a lot of the things like GCB, the Homeless Coalition, the different projects, and all of this stuff going on, I think it's above average for different cities in the United States.
And I think one of the things that contributes to that is the mindset is a housing-first orientation. The idea we need to get somebody into stable housing first, then we can work on helping them with the mental illness they may be struggling with.
And actually, in the next segment of the show, we'll be talking with some people who work in that area, getting people into secure, safe housing as a way to deal with poverty and other issues. Are workers at these agencies trained to spot people who might have a mental illness, or is it just something they learn from experience?
Oh, definitely there's some training, particularly folks who are going out into the community. I mean, there are specific workers who go out in the evenings to talk with folks who are sleeping on park benches, things like that, to see if they're willing to come to shelter, and if they're not, if they can hook them up with other types of services, medical or, you know, benefits, those types of things to try to help them get off the streets, but not just get off the streets, but help them to flourish.
I know that Greater Cincinnati Behavioral also has a homeless act team where they have a team of people who goes out on the streets and make sure that they are getting the help that they need.
And we will continue our conversation. You can join us at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. You can also find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining me this afternoon, Mount St. Joseph psychology student Rachel Jackson and Mount St. Joseph University Associate Professor of Psychology and co-founder of the Schizophrenia Oral History Project, Dr. Tracy McDonough. We're discussing the role that mental health plays in housing insecurity. And you can join us, 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Tracy, tell us a little bit more about how this documentary that Rachel created was part of a practicum that the Mount St. Joseph University has going.
Yes, actually, it's a brand new practicum that I created last year in which students initially do some basic education and training about mental illness and schizophrenia in particular. And then they take a leadership strengths test. And as a result of that, they choose to create a project that connects to mental illness as well as builds upon their leadership strengths. And what I really like about this is that many college students graduate and can tick off what their strengths are. But the cool thing about this is that once someone goes through this practicum, they can go to a graduate admissions committee or a new employer and say, hey, here's evidence of what I can do once I'm able to capitalize upon my strengths. So I think it gives students like Rachel a leg up when they graduate.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. And let's talk to Carly in Lebanon. Hi, Carly.
Hi. I just decided to call in because this topic hits really close to home for me. My ex-fiance, he started developing schizophrenia in his late 20s. And I, during our relationship, I watched his life really fall apart. He was renting a place. He had a low-income job, but just not being able to keep up a job and not having the support system that he needed, he's now living on the streets, and that unfortunately broke up our relationship because it fell onto me to take care of him, and I really just didn't have anything.
I'm sorry to hear that, Carly. That's very tough situation. Yeah.
It is, and it's not, unfortunately, uncommon. And many folks, when they are developing schizophrenia, and the time frame is very similar to what the caller had shared, struggle with really accepting the diagnosis. And until someone accepts the diagnosis, hey, this thing is really happening to me, it really is hard to get treatment because you don't treat something if you don't have anything wrong.
Again, 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join us. And let's talk to Felix now. Hi, Felix.
Hi. I just wanted to say, as a resident of Tender Mercy, that place is so wonderful. This has saved my life, and I'm a patient of Dr. Scale as well. And without them and the resources they need, I wouldn't be in a bad way. So I guess I would ask, my question is, what do you need most? What resource don't you have that you need most?
So what resources do we need more of? What do you, the two of you, think we need to have more of to deal with this issue of people who are not only homeless but mentally ill? Thank you, Felix.
I think that a resource that we struggle with in Cincinnati is the funding for human services. I think that there have been some improvements in the past years, but it's not nearly what we would need it to be to have the comprehensive services to serve everyone who needs them. I think the budget for human services in Cincinnati is around 1%. And so I think that in order to create more of those services, you would have to have more money to do so.
And I think in addition to that, when we do have funding and land available, sometimes we struggle with, and I say we, not Cincinnati, but just as Americans, struggle with some community opposition to building affordable housing for folks because of a lot of myths surrounding that.
Tracy, the figure from the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration of 20 to 25% of the homeless population in the U.S. suffering from some form of severe mental illness. Does the Cincinnati area run along the same lines, would you say, in terms of the percentage?
Yes, that's a little bit high. We're closer to more the kind of 20% number for folks who have symptoms of mental illness. But that number we tend to see smaller for folks who have severe mental illness, closer to around 12 to 15. So severe and chronic mental illness and chronic homelessness.
Rachel, in that earlier clip we heard from the documentary, there was the mention of stigma and misperceptions. How big a barrier is that for people who are going through this? How big a barrier is that to them getting help?
I think that it's possibly the biggest thing that can keep someone from getting the help they need, where I'm thinking about someone like myself, who I would consider myself a very accepting person. But even I, when I would be walking on the street past someone who was homeless and maybe talking to themselves or talking to their voices, I would not have positive thoughts about that person. I would think that maybe they're on drugs, and I would probably avoid eye contact. And I think that when I'm relatively educated and I really care about people, and if someone who really cares about people is still not making eye contact with someone on the streets, then I think that speaks even more to what maybe less caring people can do.
Well, I think it's also a fear, definitely. One of the myths surrounding folks with mental illness is that they are dangerous. And our research tells us strongly that folks with severe mental illness are much more likely to be victims of crime than perpetrators. But because their behavior might be a bit unusual, folks are afraid of them, and that contributes to the detachment. And the more we detach and we don't see ourselves as similar to other human beings on the planet, the more likely we are to stigmatize them.
You know, if someone at one of the shelters or agencies finds someone who needs, who they feel needs help, what are the steps they have to take? I mean, I imagine you can't force someone to get medical help. So what's the process that they go through? Where do you even start to connect with this person to help them get the professional care that they need?
Well, in Hamilton County, what's considered the kind of front door for mental health services is a mental health access point, MAP, M-H-A-P, and that's the initial place that many folks go to begin that road.
Again, 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. So what was the message that you wanted to get out through this video, Rachel?
I think that the biggest thing I wanted to communicate was that they are people. People who are homeless and mentally ill are people like us who might have gone through similar things that we have. And maybe they just had a few things in life throw them different curveballs that they just couldn't handle. And so I would like people to have a better sense of understanding and more empathy towards people who might be going through those struggles.
You got any plans to do any follow-up on this?
In what sense?
Another documentary or doing more research on this?
Yes. So I'm really interested in stigma and the consequences it has. And in October, I believe, we will be in Minneapolis at an oral history conference to present the documentary. So that's one way that this specific one will be followed up on.
And Tracy, tell us, you're working on the Schizophrenia Oral History Project. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, in that project, we're recording and archiving life stories of persons with schizophrenia in order to give them a voice, as well as to challenge the stigma against severe mental illness. And so we've collected about 50 stories at this point.
How do people become involved in that?
Well, they can go to our website where we have an email address for me or a phone number, and they just contact us and let us know they'd like to share their story with us. We'll explain more detail about the project, and we'll pick a time and place that's convenient for that person, whether it's at an agency they go to or even at their, you know, apartment or a library or someplace public, whatever's comfortable for them, and audio record their story, and then we transcribe it. We have it up our website, and we do tend to use excerpts from various stories in some of the articles that we publish, as well as some public presentations that we do.
And one last thing, tell me about the event that's coming up April 20th at Mount St. Joseph.
Yeah, Celebration of Teaching and Learning Day. Every year we do that, where all of the various students across the university are showcasing their research, their artistic abilities, things like that. And the keynote presentation starts at 9:25 in the morning. That's what Rachel and I will be doing, followed by a panel discussion. And it's open to the public.
And you were pointing out something earlier, too. Rachel's the first student to be a keynote speaker, isn't she?
Absolutely. In the history of Celebration of Teaching and Learning Day, Rachel's the first student to be the keynote presenter.
Rachel's just taking it on stride.
Well, again, what can the students do when they can capitalize upon their strengths?
Well, Tracy and Rachel, thank you both for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you.